Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 20th day of February 2018. As February moves by very quickly, we move into March, which is, of course, the best month in the year. We're happy to have you with us this morning. Remember, we stay with you this morning until 1 p.m., which will be this afternoon. And we do hope you can join us. Call numbers 434-1790. You can also email me directly at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. And you can WhatsApp us at 266-IVOB. Special thanks to Carol A.M. Roberts for taking us through the morning and bringing us up to this point in time. And she takes her leave and is replaced by a gentleman called Graham Vaughan, who will be your producer this morning. He's a gentleman whose voice you will hear when you call, in hushed tones, of course. And then he is the person that will put you on to me, and he's the person that will cut you if you misbehave. My name is, of course, Peter Wickham, and I am always happy to be here on Tuesdays because we have a lot of business to discuss. And, of course, the politics has been quite intense, but my mind is still focused somewhat on issues of gender. I had the good fortune last night of delivering the 8th Memorial Lecture, Milroy Reese Memorial Lecture at the Solidarity House of the Barbados Workers Union on behalf of the National Organization of Women. This is a lecture which the National Organization of Women has been putting on for many years and has now rekindled. I had the good fortune of delivering the 6th Milroy Reese Memorial Lecture, and I was so happy that I was invited back after a brief hiatus of several years. Indeed, it was 21 years since probably about 20 years since they had the last exercise. And now they have rekindled it, and they gave me the good opportunity to have the first shot. And dealing with the issue, women in the vanguard of politics in Barbados and the Caribbean, have we crossed the Rubicon yet? A most appropriate topic in the context of what is happening, where people are asking questions as to whether or not we are ready for a female prime minister. And needless to say, I am of the opinion that we are so ready for a female prime minister, it is not funny. But the lecture was a lot longer than that, and it took some time to go through a couple of developments that have happened both locally and regionally since the last lecture was delivered in 2001. And I talked a bit about some of the regional developments, the fact that we had two female prime ministers, one in Jamaica, one in Trinidad and Tobago, and the fact that we didn't, or I was unable to give a full review of their tenure and the extent to which gender was a facility. We also had the opportunity to review some data from that regional study that CADRIS did on women and the attitude toward women in politics. Of course, it was a Barbados component, and I think that those who were there learned several things, including the fact that about 60% of Barbadians do believe that there is an important role for women to play in politics and in leadership. And the vast majority of us feel that we need to have more women involved in politics. And there were some other interesting observations too related to expectations that people have, the kind of leadership that they would have preferred, and all those things that you would have heard if you had joined me last night. So that was the focus, and looking forward, I think the next time, if ever there is a next time, the focus should be on solutions. And solutions, if by then there is a need to deal with solutions, other facilities that are needed to advance the cause of women in politics. So that was my adventure last night. And this morning, I propose to get right down to business. Remember, we are ending at 1 o'clock, so there's not a whole lot of time, and I want to hear as many of your concerns as possible and respond to as many of them as I can. So as long as I can see some lights flashing, which I think that they are, it means that we have some people online. I will take the first call and say good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Okay. Well, let's see if we can get another caller and say good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Of course, when you call on 434-1790, you need to remember to turn your phone off. Turn your radio off or turn your radio down, or else we get some feedback. So, good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Greetings, Peter. How are you?
Hey, morning, Marcia. It's ironic that you would be the first caller.
Happy Thank you very much for last one. Night. Thank I you. Thought it was a very well done presentation. Yeah. Not calling about the gender issue this morning, I want to talk about the Blackmon and Gollop Primary School and the issue that it is having with Cowich. Yesterday, the students of Blackmon and Gollop would have been sent home just about half day because the field above the school is again posing a problem in relation to the cowich that is growing on the open pasture above the school. Well, I call it a pasture. It's a cane ground. It's somewhere between a cane ground and a pasture. I'm not really sure where it is. But the thing that is confusing to me is this is an issue which has plagued this school now for at least the last 5 years. There may be parents who have a longer institutional memory, but for me, I know for sure it's at least the last 3 to 5 years that the school has been facing the issue. The land is cleared at intervals, I'm going to say, under the auspices of the Ministry of Health, at least some kind of joint exercise between the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Health. What seems to be the problem is that the cowich is basically not dug out from the root. So then once there's rainfall, the cowich grows back and causes the same problem at the same time the next year. Now, Peter, if you want me to believe that you can move this country forward in terms of the economics, in terms of the governance, in terms of the administration, surely you must be able to fix cowich in a field that is affecting a school. Basically, I am now on standby because you've taken the children to school. First of all, when they left home, when they left school yesterday, you were told you have to wait and hear on the news or by news media tonight being yesterday, if there was going to be school today. I think the PTA, those parents who have WhatsApp facilities and that kind of thing connected to the PTA, were sent a message that, yes, there was school, and then that message had to be disseminated across the parent body. No official word, as far as I know, from the Ministry of Education. So school has started, but there are some staff members, as far as I understand, who would have opted not to go because of the difficulties that they're having with itchiness and eye irritation and that kind of thing. So at any point in time during the day now, you can't really plan the meeting, you can't really do too much because you're waiting for this call that tells you whether you have to go for your child or not. I mean, really? And it seems like, yeah. You know, people would say,
And cowich is a relatively simple problem to fix.
A relatively simple problem to fix.
You have your spray, and as you said, you just dig it out from the roots, and that's that.
But no, because I don't know if it has anything to do with the outstanding monies that are still owed to sugar estates and the owners of the estates not being able to maintain the estates. Because, you know, this is a problem that we also have further up in St. George, St. Philip and St. John, with these plantations that are not operating at their maximal capacity. There is a lot of cowich overtaking the fields. And we also have the problem when the rain falls that because the plantations are not maintaining their well system, you get a lot more water on the roads and that kind of thing in the actual communities and that kind of thing after rainfall. But if the government knows that the issue is that the sugar farmers are not in the position to do this type of maintenance because they're owed significant funds, then the government itself will have to create a facility to manage the problems in the time where the plantations cannot. But to have a school, to have a whole parent body, and we're talking about a school, if I'm not mistaken, that has over 600 children. So that's 1,200 adult working people that you've basically got working on a half a capacity today, because at some point during the day you're expecting that you're going to get this call, come for your child. Mm. It's not reasonable. And you can't, like I said, you can't tell me that you can manage bigger things when you can't even manage that. Oh, it is ludicrous.
And what has been the official line regarding this problem that you've been given? The official
line? But the official line, Peter, is the same as on the South Coast, is the same as with the injection wells,
is the
same as with the desalination plant. Just say nothing, and it will go away. Mm. if nobody knows about it, mm-hmm. then we'll just get up every morning, shut the school at 12 o'clock, get up the next morning, shut it at 12 o'clock again, and continue that way for as long as we can until March the 6th comes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that is the official position, but that is what it seems mm-hmm. to be to me.
Well, Marcia, what can I tell you? I hope that the right people are listening and that the right people will take action. I'm not optimistic, unfortunately, but I'm hopeful, quietly hopeful that this matter can be resolved. And I do agree with you entirely that the idea of having several children having their day's education interrupted and having their parents being interrupted on pause or more or less on standby to go and pick up children from school is a bit ridiculous.
Right. We hope.
Yeah. All right, Marcia, thanks again for calling, and also thanks again for facilitating yesterday's event. I really appreciated the opportunity to do the presentation. Let's hope that in the future, you and I will have some more bright spots to discuss as opposed to things about COVID. There's somebody who is here saying that it grows this year because of the seeds remaining in the ground. Cleaning the area is a short term, which is consistent with what Marcia was saying, that if you don't have a removal of the root system, you will continue to have a problem. Someone asking me if goats and cows can eat cowhage. Some farmers have goats and sheep grazing in the area. I don't know whether they can or not. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. Yes, good morning and welcome. Please turn your radio down and let's have a conversation. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good. What about yourself?
I'm great.
Okay. Peter, do you know today is the 20th of March?
No, today is the 20th of March.
February. I'm getting ahead of myself. The 20th mm-hmm. of February. Mm-hmm. And today would have been the day, Peter, eve of the general election of 2013.
That's right, yeah.
So tomorrow would be the 21st, which would be the day that the Prime Minister would have called an election and won and would have sworn in as Prime Minister on the 22nd mm-hmm. of February. Mm-hmm. But we are still now lingering, waiting for a general election in this country.
And you're going to linger a little longer, too, because he ain't even in Barbados.
That's the point, right? But I just said that in passing, because I want to deal with two issues, Peter. I want to deal with the comments coming from Maria Eargard in floor of Parliament on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said that she had identified herself in the lower chamber
yes.
as the leader of opposition business for the UPP.
Right. And I trust right. you're calling to congratulate her on her promotion.
Yeah, but it has been done in 23 days shy of the dissolution of Parliament. So mm-hmm. I don't know what's the motive behind it, Peter, and I don't want to speculate at this time. Mm-hmm. But the point I want to make is that she had made some pronouncements which I believe that ought to be addressed. And that is that she said, as she spoke about the obsolete... the thing should not be obviously the sewage plant. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had listened to her speech.
I listened to the whole thing with great interest. Right. I was listening to see what would be said. So,
but here's the irony in the speech, right? Mm. I'm not speculating either as to who the speech was prepared by because I don't have the evidence of that. But the point I want to make this morning is this, Peter, is that if you bought a brand new vehicle, Peter, and the vehicle having been a brand new vehicle, regardless of if it was a no-name brand or not, right? And you failed to maintain it within a specified time and based on what is required of you, the owner of that vehicle, right? And it breaks down after 5 years or 6 years. The fact that it is new has nothing to do with the issue. The issue is that it was lack of maintenance that caused the vehicle to break down, right? The bottom line here, right? Because we're here about this 20 years, Peter. And the amount of time, the amount of people that came on to the sewer system that put extra load, Peter, the point has to be made that if proper maintenance was done, whatever load was added to the sewage plant would have been observed.
Right. Patrick, I think that's obvious. I agree with you. And I was listening to her speaking, and there are several illogical aspects of that comment. Not least of which is the fact that, as you said, it's been a long time to maintain it. The reality is that she was the parliamentary representative for Parliament at that time. So if it was such a huge problem, she would have raised it. But Patrick, I want you to go on to the other thing, though. Go on to the third party. Because that nobody ain't taking on her without foolishness.
Yes.
What is the third party issue? You are happy that she is now in a third party? You're congratulating her?
No, it might have been not be where Maria Garrett aligns herself. The bottom line is that I'm now being told that having made such a pronouncement, that she is now under the Constitution entitled now for money.
I said that. I didn't say that last week and the week before. Once you are represented in Parliament, you are entitled to a share of the $200,000 or $300,000.
My understanding is $150,000 that the party will now be getting. But the point
is. But she can't get $150,000. It's $300,000, no?
Peter, that is my information, but you can research it. The point I want to make, Peter, is that how does the government, in the face of this shy of the dissolution of Parliament, can be entered into such an arrangement with a third party who an individual declares after being independent, coming and being independent on the floor of Parliament, now declares in the lower chamber that there are now the leader of opposition business for a UPP and now can be granted funding on the eve of the dissolution of Parliament? That is, I want that question to be answered and answered by no less a person than the Prime Minister of this country.
You can forget about the Prime Minister answering. I think this is saying that people like you and I have to discuss. The Prime Minister ain't taking us on in that. Look, my sense is that the provision, I tried to find the actual provision to read out on here, and I had great difficulty. I found the section of the Administration of Parliament Act, but I could not find the specific provision, largely because I believe it was amended and I couldn't find the amended version. But it's very vague as I understand it. It says parties with parliamentary representation, which means that the speaker, I presume, would be ultimately the person who interprets what that means. And if he is so minded, then she's entitled to a share of the money. My problem was that if it is that the money was distributed already, as is often the case, where at the beginning of the session, you say $300,000, 150B, 150D, and the parties basically requested, I believe, is in $50,000 tranches, the money should be used out by now. So the question is for me, if it is that she is now entitled to a share, what would they do? Would they go back to Parliament and create a separate 150 and give her, and so on? But Patrick, the reality is I don't have a problem with her getting the money.
No,
do you have a problem with her getting the money?
No, the problem I have, Peter, is that it all is happening on the eve of the dissolution of Parliament.
Yeah, but that's how it is.
But, Peter, I have some reservations. I have reservations, Peter, as to what is going on behind the scenes as it relates to these third parties, even though I don't want to give them any relevance because, in my opinion, they don't deserve any relevance. But the point is, Peter, is that they are driven by the engines of unknown individuals who has no good intention for the opposition Barbados Labour Party going into the general election. I think that the best way that I can frame that.
But you know, Patrick, the nature of democracy is that these things can happen, and if it is that she's entitled at any point in time. And I get your point, because it is an unusual situation where on the eve of an election, you have a new party being created, and that person automatically being entitled to a fairly substantial sum of money. And they can use it for whatever mission they think. But you know what, Patrick? Ultimately, I think that you and me and the rest of the Barbadian electorate are going to be the final arbiter. Because I know that money that she will get is going to be the first and last set of money she will ever get from the government of Barbados, from the taxpayers. Because after the election, that party ain't going to mean no party with parliamentary representation.
But Peter, before going to my other point, I think it is important for me to make this point. Misconception and being misled is a very serious thing. This is a seat, Peter. Members of the Barbados Labour Party to 24 members of the Democrat Labour Party. And it was held by Henry Ford. Now, I don't understand...
When it was 26 to 2, they called it 2?
I think they called it 2, Blank Mice.
It was Twiddle-Dee and Twiddle-Dum.
Oh, I'm not sure. But the point I want to make, Peter...
The question is, who is D and who is Dum?
The point I want to make is that this is a seat that Maria Egard hadn't been guided properly about her business as it relates to her paramedic business, Peter, would still be holding on to this seat today.
But that's all right?
But being misled.
She could have held on to that seat till she dead.
Precisely the point, yeah. Right? So, and if you if in a 79-year-old party, you were able to get that seat and give it up through nonsense and ignorance, how then do you expect going back for it under a UPP? Peter, it is rubbish. Let me move on to my...
Because you remember that seat was pitched, a pitch battle was fought for that seat between Kerry Simmons and the Assembly, not Eastman. You remember back in the day when William Duguid prevailed and they were fighting, it was a pitch battle because they realized that that is gold star territory for Barbados Labour Party. So you now move to a situation where you are fortunate enough to get such a strong seat and you find yourself in a pickle where you are now struggling as an independent member of Parliament and you know full well that once Parliament is dissolved, that is it for you. But she has only herself to blame about the situation. Because Maria Eargard seemed to have become so possessed with herself and her own importance that she believed that she could jettison the Barbados Labour Party or let them jettison her, and either she could sue to force them to keep her or alternatively she could cause them to lose the seat, which is exactly what she seems to be attempting to do now. But there's no substance to that. Your final point?
Let me move on to my second point quick, Peter. Mm-hmm. I heard the Attorney General... said that he wanted to move swiftly to bring laws to hold parents accountable for the actions of the children, mm-hmm. as it relates to the upsurge in the recent stabbing incidents among school children and their peers. But the honest truth, right? If I am to take the Attorney General's comments, basically removing the law aspect of it, right? I think he's on solid ground. Mm-hmm. Let me explain why he's on, but he has some challenges. But let me say why. Because, biblically, parents will be held accountable, Peter, for their children. But that's the bottom line. That is any person who practices Christianity understands that well. They will be held accountable for their children, the actions of the children. But the challenge I'm having, Peter, with this aspect going forward, is that after we have created a society that now has a myriad of single parents in the midst of our society. In circumstances where mothers who have, let me say, three children, have a job holding on to that, cannot afford to lose, father gone along with his business, Peter, and that mother has to struggle with the affairs of that household. Coming in at night after 9 o'clock, having to wait for a bus for 4 or 5 hours after you leave work at 4:30, then go get up in the morning to leave at 6, and that and toddler, 7 or 8 years old, got to journey to school on his own and return back on his own. Peter, it is difficult for that mother, single-handedly, to be monitoring every single aspect of that particular child and that child, the things that child do. So why we won't go in the direction of holding them accountable, I believe it should be both parents should be going that direction. And I believe that this is a conversation that we need to sit down and have with the society as a whole. Mm-hmm. That is my view. But the challenge that we are having, Peter, you recall Education Minister Ronald Jones had an audience with the children. I remember Minister Jones telling the children that the teachers don't own them. And the teachers don't own the school. You see, Peter, when we are called to lead, and we make a lot of presumptuous comments in the presence of our children, because I believe if there are any shortcomings on the part of teachers, they should be schooled by themselves and not in the presence of the children. I think that our approach as it relates to dealing with the teachers, and this is the minister I am speaking of now, his approach, Peter, has left a lot to be deserved. Peter, there's something we learn, Peter. You still there?
I'm here, yes.
We learn, Peter.
Yes.
And we are taught. You know what I mean? The things that we are taught are values and principles, et cetera, right? The things that we learn is bad behavior, selfishness, and all those different things. The point I want to make this morning, Peter, right, is that how does a minister of education, having come to school to address an issue over the stabbing at the school, in circumstances where the teachers have a union, a body representing them, but you can close the door in the face of the union where they cannot participate in any meaningful discussion that you have come to the school to address. But they don't think that as they don't see that as disrespect. Now, if you exhibit blatant disrespect in the presence of the children in an effort to solve or bring a solution to a problem, and you are showing disrespect to the teachers and ancillary staff, what message then are you sending to the very children that you now want to bring under your control?
Yeah, there's a reasonable point you're making. I support the idea of holding parents accountable in theory. In practice, I appreciate that this is somewhat challenging, but I do support it in theory, and I think that that's a step in the right direction. All right, Patrick, we're going to have to run. Thanks a lot for calling and for participating in the program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we continue with more of your calls. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. We've got a couple of WhatsApp messages. Peter, with all due respect, I don't think anyone can say who will I will not be in Parliament. Peter, with respect to Maria Aigard, clearly she's all about the money. And then the other one says, I read this already. This is the one about COVID. So we take another call. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Greetings and salutations to your good self. First, may I ask you before getting on to my business, are you familiar with the word surrender?
I am indeed, sir.
Okay, by which I shall let it be my preamble by making reference to an article dated back 3rd of September 2003. Excuse my voice, I'm not a good singer. I surrender all, I surrender all for Jesus, all for Jesus, I surrender all. Mr. Wickham, sir.
You're right, you're not a good singer. I could tell.
Thank you. My last conversation with you on January 23rd, 2018, you wanted to engage me in what I deem as a religious biblical conversation, which I said I wouldn't get involved in church politics, but you felt that I was shifting the conversation. Let me please explain to your good self this morning. I have limited intelligence, and I try to avoid things which I deem too rich for my blood. I was not trying to get aware when I said that I agreed with you that Barbados is not a Christian society, and I explained it to you that there is more Christianity than, there are more churchianity, sir, than Christianity, and with my limited intelligence, there is a difference between religiously speaking and biblical interpretation. Some people are accused of being mad when they talk about the Bible, and others are accused as being atheists. Mr. Wickham, sir, an article by A. Peter Wickham, People and Things, appeared on page A.A. Wednesday, September 3rd, 2003, in the Midweek Nation. I surrender. It began with a quotation. Barbadians are determined to prove that reality is not a social construct. Instead, it is carved on a wall somewhere, Julius Gittins. I shall quote the first paragraph of People and Things. Quote, a few weeks ago, this author was engaged in a heated debate with the church and its followers, and I remain fascinated at the interest my remarks provoke. This certainly not the first time I have spoken out on controversial issues, ranging from the death penalty to prostitution. But for some reason, the most recent issue seemed to have touched a raw nerve in Barbados. End of quote. There are two persons to me, journalist, moderators, your good self, and Mr. John Madman Lovell, with a similar philosophy. Before President Obama came on the scene, my two favorite presidents were Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Better remain silent and thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Obamacare. I read your report before I continue my final contribution for this.
No, sir, we can't continue. I will let you wrap up, and then we'll just give a quick response. But we can't continue with another point. You wanted to say something in closing?
I wanted to say something else if you had prefer to comment on what I said earlier on there.
Well, no, I mean, my comment is very simple, and I'm happy that you were able to pull that article because it reflected a fact that, you know, it comes to a point where you just can't argue with some people, and I think that that was the position that I was taking, that when someone is prepared to argue that the earth is flat, it's perhaps best not to engage them any further in conversation. And the fact is that where those kinds of issues are concerned, I was convinced that Barbadians were not prepared to understand that change is something that happens. So, but I thank you for bringing it back up because, as I said, it was a good point. You want to just make a final quick wrap-up, sir?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Exodus 20, verse 57. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guilty that taketh his name in vain. Politicians from time to time use the church their convenience to bring out political statements, taking away from pastors their duties, making more biblical quotations than the pastors of the church. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, says the third commandment. Mm-hmm. As we approach an election, I recall the words of former Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Sir Erskine Sanford, to make a political point, then I reject the advice of others and say, God told me to go this way. I misuse his name if all I am doing is seeking approval for my own desires. Mm. Mr. McCann, then don't use scripture out of context to try to support an idea. I want to be true. I am using God's name in vain. I shall hear goes off by saying, sir, I am very objectional. So as to substantiate the submission, I think the former Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Mr. Erskine Sanford, was making reference to one of the four Gospels. Lord, teach me to know my friends, for those who are not for me are against me. Matthew 5, verse 30.
Okay,
I think that you would agree with what I've said there.
Yes, and I thank you for your contribution this morning, as always, well thought out and well presented. Thanks so much. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning. Good morning and welcome. We have quite a few calls on the line. Please turn your radio down and let's have a conversation. Good morning, 4341790. Good morning and welcome.
Peter?
Yes, sir.
Blessings unto you. This is your Thank good you. Friend here, the man you called Mr. Harvey Culture,
good
and any other
you,
is
sir.
Up to feet.
Huh? Right. Good to hear from you.
I'm good to know that.
Well, man, you have fast this morning, Mr. Agriculture.
Well, I got so much to talk about, and you can't get the time to talk. Mm-hmm. When I'm done at 1 o'clock, and the producer ain't making the sport, mm-hmm. then you talk, you can't get in nothing more, so I'm going down. Let me tell you something. Brass Tacks is the best calling program in the world.
It's easy in Barbados, because ain't got no other.
Right, but it's... Peter, you're dangerous. If a woman here, you know, you can get a lawsuit. Be careful.
They got other programs.
So. All I'm going to say is if Madam M.H. hear you, you're going to be in problems. Behave yourself.
But she's still got, apparently she's beyond the TV still, so she's still got
I listen to me. All good things, though. You know, there is people that you look out for and you help.
Let all of them parade now. It ain't going to be for too long.
I see your
Prime Minister in the newspaper saying that he will be back. He will be back. He promised the New York branch of the Democratic Labor Party that he'll be back in February next year. As I said, let all of them parade.
You mean where he'll
be back.
You mean where he buy a ticket out of all the money he get as Prime Minister from WestJet or American Airlines, but not more out of my taxpayer's money? You're going to be back and be a joke, Peter, though.
He'll be back.
We were met with George Carpool to talk about me, and we got to talk about somebody else too. Because for doing the orbit, according to the lyric, if I hit you, hit me back. Mm-hmm. If I talk about you, talk back about somebody else. Simple as that. And that's the philosophy now that agriculture got and keep your head up high. Now, listen. Last week I spoke to you about the garbage up here, baby. You can remember.
You did.
And let me tell you something. I was here sitting now watching the 7 o'clock news, the power of Brass Tacks, and I heard a bobcat and two trucks. I knew it wasn't the garbage truck. So I wonder, what is bobcat and trucks going to be out so late? One truck is an MTW truck. One truck was a drainage truck and an MTW Bobcat. Guys on ground putting the garbage in the Bobcat bucket and garbage move place was cleaned up. So I just want to say, so you see, the power
so
of radio.
Radio works.
Radio works, Peter. Right. But at the end of the day, garbage trucks still needed. Mm-hmm. And the building, a big lot of building. I want to know if the minister destroyed the. I know that the ministers like nice houses and nice vehicles, but it looked to me now like the ministries, where the whole of the ministry, don't want to see who could build the biggest and the most fanciest buildings. You understand why, sister?
Mm-hmm.
Look at the pung there at the waterworks building. Look at the building now that the minister in charge of sanitation building out there in St. Thomas. I want us to try to go past the CGI tower.
No.
Serious though, Peter, are we saying we ain't got no money? Mm-hmm. And these people still looking back 10 years down the road when money was there, the foreign reserves was good. I had a wonderful prime minister named the Honorable Owen Seymour Arthur who keep the poor people living. These ain't keeping nobody alive. Everybody out the ocean without no life jacket, but everybody's still doing as they like. Mm-hmm. So I really would like to know what is going on in Barbados.
So a lot of us have that concern. What else you have for us this morning? Because we're going to have to move pretty quickly.
All right, Peter, good.
All right?
Uh-huh,
okay, thanks a lot for calling, sir. It's good to hear from you. Somebody's asking about Toni Moore, and they're saying that she's been very quiet these days. Has she been silenced? I had the good fortune of running into Toni Moore last night. She came to the lecture that he delivered, and she was there. She's seems to be in awfully good health, you know, looking as well and as ever. She interacted and so on. So I know that she definitely has not been silent. She's talkative, and she was there. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, ma'am. How are you going? Long time no hear.
No, never mind.
It's such a joy to hear your Jamaican accent.
Well, you know, Jamaican can't change their accent unless they want
something. No, I like to hear
something
it. Like,
not.
I like to I hear it.
Yes, I do love my accent. I think it's the best in the world. Anyway, now, Peter, I don't know what's going on with these telephone companies. No, you pay your bill on time.
Mm-hmm.
On time. And then when you realize they send you late payment bill, you know, charge of late payment, how can that be? And when you go to them to talk about it, show pay, don't pay on time. That doesn't matter what show pay do. Show pay is their representative to collect their money. Right? You understand what I'm saying?
I understand perfectly. If you pay SurePay within the cutoff period, where you know there's a title, there's a cutoff period that it should be posted at the end of that day. I think that SurePay posts not only daily but several times during the course of a day.
But this is what Digicel are doing, right? And now, I have a good friend, a very close friend of mine. You know, you get like 500 minutes, I think, for every month, right? Now they're telling her that she's not entitled to that anymore, right? And send her a bill for the overseas bill, which is wrong. You get, you sign a contract, you have the internet, you have the television, well, you know, the phone come in it. And now they're telling you your overseas call per minute, like to America, Canada, and the UK, you cannot make that call anymore. You have to pay.
Mm.
How can Digicel do that? And they don't put it in the paper or advertise that they are doing these kind of things, though, Peter.
Yeah.
Huh? Don't you think it's, you know, no one is here for the public that who have to earn their, go there and earn odd money, not the one who can give their gold card and don't worry about the bill, but you that work in your little job and to pay your bill, they're telling you now you cannot get those things anymore? I would like Digicel someone to come in and say it's true or not, because that's what happened to my friend.
Okay, well, they listen, they monitor the program, and hopefully they will get in contact with us and give an answer.
Anyway,
to your
one more thing, Peter.
Sure.
Now this thing with the government. You remember when the election they said that we are going to make people pay for bus fare, right? Now what is going on with this? They want to give the private coach owners and the minibus to collect people. Will the old people, when they get on the pensioners, will they, and you know, get on those coaches, will they have to pay?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
So, oh, you think, listen, you think what is $2 per child to run a coach? Mm-hmm. A coach costs so much to insurance tax. Huh? And then
there will have to be a subvention in the same way that the transport board receives a subvention for the students. Then there should be a subvention to the coach operators.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, something ain't right. Something smells very fishy to me, Diego. And you know, there's a lot of things this government seems to be wanting.
You know,
let's
give it an opportunity and see if it can happen. The fact is that it's not likely, but let's just see what goes. So if the minister is telling us it's a possibility, let's see if it is indeed a possibility.
Look how many things that tell us going to be possibility and nothing come true.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, thing now they're moving everything that you get. This thing is in sight now and trying to do this and do that before March.
Before March.
All right. But anyway, they're going anyway, so it doesn't matter anyway. Bye.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. I have a WhatsApp message here. Good morning, Peter. I heard your opening remarks, and I'm here shaking my head. The question of whether Barbados is ready for a female prime minister, give me a break. Why should it be about gender or the person? Shouldn't it be about capacity? It is my belief that the real reason for all of this talk about a woman being prime minister is really a red herring and nothing more. Anyone who looks at Ms. Motley's track record, unless they are being political and in denial, would have to admit that her record of performance is pretty impressive, all genders being equal, no pun intended. And I must tell you, sir, that I agree with you entirely. I did respond to this whole question of Barbados not being ready for a female prime minister in the lecture, and I gave a substantial reference and evidence regarding Ms. Motley's performance as an individual. And against that background, I concluded that she has been, certainly the record speaks for itself, that she's been an outstanding politician. She has been an outstanding politician and far better than several men against whom she's competed, as well as women. So there really is no question in my mind where that is concerned. But nonetheless, it's a question that can be asked and a question that needs to be answered. Dr. Brastax, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Okay, Stats, fine, man. Yeah, fine. Mr. Gum. I do a slight continuation last week. It won't be touching up slightly with the leadership. Now, thank the Lord, we're down to two last weeks, exactly 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be much longer after that. I mean, this comedy, where would this comedy end? This comedy can't go on too long.
It's just two more Tuesdays with me.
Yeah.
And it's all over.
Yeah, two comedies. I mean, you have a minister that is so slow. The two parties had to go there and start the campaigning. He's so slow, he's left behind in the lurch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's so tardy. Now, let me just say to you, the Barbados need a visionary leader like Miss Molly, not a porker like Mr. Stewart. Now, a couple of things about Miss Molly.
Is that a porker?
Yeah, porker. Porking. You don't know much about cricket, you said, right?
Oh, is that cricketing terminology?
Yeah,
so a poke is a fellow who is pushed for ones and twos.
Then getting the runs. Yeah, ones and twos. And you're getting
the
runs.
Hitting the fours and sixes.
You know.
So you still know a little something.
Yeah, you know something.
Yeah, it's just because I remember in my cricketing days, somebody called me a poker.
Right, you were hitting the boundary.
But I wasn't hitting the ball, period, so.
Yeah.
You were like a swiper. All right, sir.
Yeah. No, Miss Motley spoke about Saracen school children about 20 years or so ago when she was Minister of Education, right?
Mm-hmm.
She has been in the leadership role, politically leadership role, for about 20 years or so. The most prepared leader for leadership of Barbados ever. No one has been prepared as much as her, right? Right. Taylor, I'm going to look at it at two of the little scenarios between she and the prime minister. The first scenario you can look at, when the Glendale prison brought, I heard a couple of callers when they call you and is questioning that the prison bird don't want Miss Motley leadership and tenor and things like that. That's nothing to be ashamed about. Miss Motley did not take a match and light the prison. It is a crisis.
That wasn't suggested, though.
No. I'm meaning that.
That's my what has been suggested is that had she taken action in certain regards, maybe the prison would not have burned down.
No, I don't agree with that.
So that's the issue that you have to respond to. No,
well,
I don't think that should burn
that
in the
as
prison.
Well, because that's a 17th century prison. So right. All the party, everyone from Barrow back up, from Sir Grantley back up then. So, you know, it burned on her. But the most important thing that will happen is how the swift action she took.
To build that one.
Yeah, and the seamless action. Not a prisoner of this, about 900 men. Not a prisoner escaped. No, we have a South Coast story project meandering for the last 2 years. That's the time that she took to build a new prison. Mm-hmm. And that is meandering for 2 years.
You know, one of the things I thought was interesting when I heard of the prison fire in Georgetown, Guyana,
right,
was the comparative difference in how well ours was managed compared to
theirs.
A
lot of people escaped.
No, I appreciate that the Georgetown prison was much more of a mess than Glendaire.
Right.
But certainly when it was burned to the ground, there were prisoners escaping.
I don't even know if they cashed back all of them yet.
But there was none of that. There was none of that in Barbados, and I think that's a significant thing. The other point was that President Granger, who had taken over before the prison fire, is not being blamed, or neither his national security minister. They're not being blamed for the prison fire in the way that some would attempt to blame Ms. Motley for the prison fire.
But you know how these guys function, right? They're dealing with blame games. That's right. Now another issue here is this, right? The National Commission of Law and Order, that receives widespread public consultation as opposed to the Police Amendment Bill 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You know? She also responded quickly to the hurricane-affected regional countries. Quick so she empathized with the people and the leaders and the citizens. They also held concerts. The party sent down donations to the countries, unlike the PM, who extremely tardy as usual. This is 168 days that he has not even said word one to Antigua and Barbuda Prime Minister. Now, they had a situation here again now where the DLP wanted to pay CBC to bring out an ad or something like this. They refused. The DO CBC over $100,000, right? Was it members are on the thing daily? You understand? So this like Barbados need a visionary leader like Miss Molly. Several things Miss Molly said over time, the government laughed at her, you know, but they came back at a later date and said that and done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you had the when you had the Kiko, you know, confidence vote, when she asked for judicial manager, they introduced one. She also called for an intimate persons group. Then they pick a committee, right? She also in 2012 called for $300 million fund for the hotel sector. They came back. Only thing that I have with that, they give Sandals $500 million to give us the Walmart. So they were coming behind time and doing the same thing, right? Now, I heard some issues here last week. People were talking about the equipment at the port, the military equipment at the port. And I think someone, even in the Parliament of Barbados, said that was promised. As far as I'm concerned, I think that's a mix-up. Because I can remember on the 27th of March 2015, right, a Chinese hospital ship near Archbeast. That arrived in Barbados for 7 days, is it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It docked near the West Court headquarters at Spring Garden. It provided medical services to those who were referred from the QEH, the polyclinics, and the Barbados Defense Force. The staff officials were to meet with government representatives. Members of the ship maintenance unit were expected to visit the Barbados Defense Force to participate in a number of activities like training and the maintenance of the medical equipment. Listen to this one here now, right? To donate cultural and sports equipment. That what the Chinese were supposed to do in 2015. Donate cultural and sports equipment, not military equipment. So So I just like to highlight that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I really am not in a position. I read a note that someone sent to me in that regard, and they said it was a Chinese gift. If you're saying that the Chinese gift related to medical and sports equipment and not military equipment, then the question is, who paid for that stuff? What was it there for? So the truth will come out eventually, mm-hmm. one way or the other.
All right,
Stassman, thanks a lot for calling and for your intervention. I have something here I just wanted to read to you quickly. A gentleman just sent this to me, and he said, Peter, I enjoy your style of moderating on the show. There are a couple of things I'd like to touch on. Firstly, I'm a Christian. I think most Christians that call to debate about these things on the radio really should not. As you pointed out, many people who identify the faith don't practice it seriously, and many atheists actually know the Bible better than a lot of them. Callers not knowing if Mary and Joseph were indeed married is proof of that. You're technically correct. That's the next point. Barbados isn't a Christian state since Christianity isn't formally recognized as our national religion. However, based on 2010 figures in the CIA factbook, 3 in 4 people here identify as Christian. When people talk about us being a Christian society, there is generally that they're referring to, not us being a Christian state. I don't view the statement as much further from Wikipedia, stating that Christianity is dominant religion in the Western world based on the Pew Research Center's figures. That statement certainly doesn't imply that most countries in the Western world are Christian states. I therefore think we can accurately identify a Christian society without having to be a Christian state. Excellent point. Excellent distinguishing approach. And at this point, we take a few messages and come right back.